This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. I had planned to continue talking a little bit about roses, but I got sidetracked by a clipping that I read in the paper, and then I was lured by orchids, as people who deal with orchids would understand. The epigraph to Orchid Fever by Eric Hansen says you can get off alcohol, drugs, women, food, and cars, but if you're hooked on orchids, you're finished. You never get off orchids. Never. So that may be where I am. The clipping that I read is not about orchids, but about a tiny water lily. In crime that will shock the green-fingered, a thief has made off with a tiny water lily, one of the rarest plants in the world from a botanical gardens in London. The plant, of which only a handful of specimens still exist in the wild, was stolen from a lily pond at the famed Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew, the police said. The thief is thought to have dug or pulled it from the damp, temperature-controlled mud it needs to survive. Kew Gardens is one of the only places in the world to cultivate this plant, and there were only 30 plants on display, London's Metropolitan Police said. They cite its value as priceless because of its rarity. The stolen plant may have been easier to sneak out of the Botanic Garden, which has its own security because of its small size. The plant's bright green lily pads can measure less than half an inch across, and its white flower with yellow stamen is barely bigger than a fingernail. The Nymphaea was discovered in 1987 by a German botanist, Eberhard Fischer, at a thermal freshwater spring in Rwanda, the only known location in the wild. However, overexploitation of this hot spring meant the fragile habitat dried up and the water lily dried out there in about 2008. It was brought back from the brink of extinction only by the efforts at Bonn Botanic Garden in Germany, where a number of living examples had been taken, and the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew, which succeeded in propagating the delicate plant in 2009. After a number of failed attempts, horticulturalist Carlos Magdalena at Kew cracked the technique needed to persuade the water lily to grow from the remaining precious seeds. He realized that unlike all other water lilies, the Nymphaea grows in warm mud rather than water, and so found a way to replicate its native habitat using pots of damp loam surrounded by water kept at precisely 25 degrees Celsius, 77 degrees Fahrenheit, just as had occurred by the thermal spring. Only then did the seedlings flourish and develop into adult plants. According to Kew, for a couple of years, the only living examples of the water lily were found in Bonn and London. Now a few plants are again found in the wild in Rwanda. Richard Bailey, director of horticulture at Kew Gardens, said the police had been called after the theft was discovered Thursday. The staff is dedicated to the conservation of plants, and when incidents of this nature occur, it's a blow to morale, he said. We take our theft, the theft of our invaluable scientific collection of plants, very seriously. According to Kew Gardens website, the plant has no common name because of its scarcity, but it has become known unofficially as the pygmy Rwandan water lily. It has always been so rare that no uses have ever been known, it adds. Other instances of theft have occurred, but they are isolated and infrequent, Kew Gardens said. So I turned to thinking about the theft of plants, and of course the first book that came to my mind was by Susan Orlean, called The Orchid Thief. I had read her feature in the New Yorker magazine by the same name, and then she developed it in great detail in the book, The Orchid Thief. She begins, John LaRoche is a tall guy, skinny as a stick, pale-eyed, slouch-shouldered, and sharply handsome, in spite of the fact that he's missing all of his front teeth. He has the posture of al dente spaghetti and the nervous intensity of someone who plays a lot of video games. LaRoche is 36 years old. Until recently, he was employed by the Seminole Tribe of Florida, setting up a plant nursery and an orchid propagation laboratory on the tribe's reservation in Hollywood, Florida. It's illegal in Florida to take any orchids at all, except that the Seminole Native American tribe are not subject to this ruling, and so they can take orchids and do with them what they will. I met John LaRoche for the first time a few years ago in the Collier County Courthouse in Naples, Florida. I was in Florida at the time because I had read a newspaper article reporting that a white man, LaRoche, and three Seminole men had been arrested with rare orchids they had stolen out of a Florida swamp. And I wanted to know more about the incident. The newspaper story was short but alluring. It described the wild swamp near Naples, filled with exceptional plants and trees, including some that grow nowhere else in the world. All wild orchids are now considered endangered, and it is illegal to take them out of the woods anywhere, particularly out of state property. She continues, and I'm skipping a lot in her book. She was particularly interested in finding the ghost orchid. If the ghost orchid was really only a phantom, it was still such a bewitching one that it could seduce people to pursue it year after year and mile after miserable mile. If it was a real flower, I wanted to keep coming back to Florida until I could see one. The reason was not that I love orchids. I don't even especially like orchids. What I wanted to see was this thing that people were drawn to in such a singular and powerful way. Everyone I was meeting connected to the orchid poaching had circled their lives around some great desire. LaRoche had his crazy inspiration, and orchid lovers had their intense devotion to their flowers, and Seminoles had their burning dedication to their history and culture. It was a religion. I wanted something as much as people wanted these plants, but it isn't part of my constitution. I think people my age are embarrassed by too much enthusiasm. I had seen nothing but bare roots, I said as I talked with LaRoche on the phone. I was wondering whether I had missed this year's flowers or whether perhaps the only place the ghost orchid bloomed was in the imagination of people who'd walked too long in the swamp. What I didn't say was that strong feelings always make me skeptical at first. What else I didn't say was that his life seemed to be filled with things that were just like the ghost orchid. Wonderful to imagine and easy to fall in love with, but a little fantastic and fleeting and out of reach. I could hear the soft, puckery gulp as he inhaled cigarette smoke. Then he said, expletive JC, of course, there are ghost orchids out there. I've stolen them. I know exactly where they are. The phone was silent for a moment, and then he cleared his throat and said, you should have gone with me. The Orchidaceae is a large, ancient family of perennial plants with one fertile stamen and a three-petaled flower. One petal is unlike the other two. In most orchid species, the petal is enlarged into a pouch or lip and is the most conspicuous part of the flower. There are more than 30,000 known orchid species, and there may be thousands more that haven't yet been discovered, and maybe thousands that once lived on Earth that are now extinct. Humans have created another 100,000 hybrids by cross-fertilizing one species with another or by crossing different hybrids to one another in plant breeding labs. Orchids are considered the most highly evolved flowering plants on Earth. They are unusual in form, uncommonly beautiful in color, and often powerfully fragrant, intricate in structure, and different from any other family of plants. The reason for their unusualness has always been puzzled over. One guess is that orchids might have evolved in soil which was naturally irradiated by a meteor or mineral deposit, and that radiation is what mutated them into thousands of amazing forms. Well, I will continue with you the next time I have the opportunity to speak to you about Petals and Prose. Thank you for listening. This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose.